the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars, where I am joined by Dr. Kapil Gupta. He is the CEO and co-founder of MedCircle. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Alex.
You bet. So if you could tell us, what is MedCircle, first of all?
MedCircle is basically a platform which we created where anybody on the universe who has any interest in a healthcare topic, they can just go there, sign up, pick that topic, and forget about it. We go search the World Wide Web, find trusted information on that topic, and send it to the person.
Yeah, because I think we can all relate to having some kind of symptom, and we go down the rabbit hole of Google, of looking up what we might have, but obviously, there's a trap with that where it might Absolutely. Just be a cold, and the next thing you know, you think you have cancer, and you know, you're getting all this information on Google that a lot of times is not very valid or pertinent to your particular symptoms, I would imagine is part of the inspiration. So if you could speak to that a little bit about how you are really making sure that this is a credible place for people to go.
Yeah, I think what you just said, that people get lost on Google, that was one of the problems we want to solve. More than just searching for a question, if someone has a specific condition, even a chronic condition primarily, they stop looking for information because they just get busy with their lives. So what we do is we actually check where we are pulling the information from. We take all the sources, we get them verified by trusted healthcare providers who make sure anything published on a specific platform or a website is credible. Then we curate content and send it to the user. So the way we make sure it is trusted is we make sure the people who are publishing on a website are trusted sources. To give an example, if someone is suffering from diabetes, now there may be new information published on, say, Mayo Clinic, NIDDH, NIH site, or New York Times. So what we do is we curate all these articles, put them at one place so you don't have to do the search.
So do you make some of your own content as well?
Right now, we are not. Right now, we are a platform where we curate content and send it to the consumer. We don't write our own content.
And part of the benefit is obviously the way you can search. So tell me a little bit about the user experience when you go to your website or your app. What can you look for to make sure you're getting that targeted, curated content that is most pertinent to what you're dealing with?
So as a user, when you sign up, one of the first steps is we ask you to pick a topic. Once you pick a topic, you have a feed, and that's what you need to do. You sign up, you pick a topic, and you will have a feed where you will see all the content. So there's nothing else you need to do. So the user needs to make a call or make a choice what health conditions or health topics they're interested in, and the customized, or we call it hyper-personalized feed, shows up. And that's about it.
Right. And you, of course, are a doctor at one point, were a practicing physician. So that's a big change,
yes.
Going from being a practicing doctor to now an entrepreneur, very different lifestyle. Tell me a little bit about that. Let's circle back to the beginning of your physician days and how you ended up in entrepreneurship.
Absolutely. So I think one other side, before I dive into that piece,
sure.
One other piece of MedCircle is it is also a publishing platform for healthcare providers. So any licensed healthcare provider can actually sign up on MedCircle as a healthcare provider and create their own content. People can follow them and they will receive educational content straight from a healthcare provider. So now going back to my doctor days, so one of the problems that I used to face in my practice of medicine was if I have 100 patients I've seen over a period of 6 months, I did not have a digital tool to send them information. If they come see me in my office, I give them a printout. If they don't see me in 6 months, I don't give them any health information because they are at their home. They have never seen me. So to solve that problem, we created MedCircle, that it is a place where healthcare providers can deliver information to the consumers. And then we as a company curate information straight for the consumer. So definitely changing from the doctor days to an entrepreneurial world is very, very different. But my passion for solving that problem got to a point where we decided that we need to take care of this and we started MedCircle.
Interesting. So it's this unique collaboration between your technology and trusted, curated content,
right.
And also the doctor and their patient and what that patient needs.
Right.
And so you have a co-founder. Tell
right.
me a little bit about how you guys got together and decided that this is the idea that you really wanted to move forward with in the business world.
So our co-founder is Doug Colbert. And Doug Colbert as a successful entrepreneur in the past. And after his successful ventures, he actually started a clinic in Chicago. It was a mental health clinic for inner city kids. When that clinic was running, the healthcare providers also told him one of the problems that they have is they don't have a digital tool where they can, in a group fashion, send healthcare content to the parents of those children. So they tried doing this on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, but those platforms were not customized for health information. I got connected to Doug through a personal friend, and our vision was pretty much the same, that we want to solve this health information platform outside clinical care. We talked about it, and I was finishing my business school at that time, and we decided, okay, let's build a platform for this. And we are here now, and it's a live product, and that's how it all came about.
Which is amazing, and it's all turned out. But I know that making that transition was challenging.
Absolutely.
Mostly because you got a lot of resistance from some of the people in your life. So tell me a little bit about what they were saying and how you had to push past that.
Absolutely. I think it was a transition time for me also. I went through this period where I was thinking, is this the right decision? Working as a physician, practicing for 6-7 years, you get into that phase where you have a comfortable lifestyle, you have a good income, and then you hear about entrepreneurship where it is a lot of challenges coming about. But when I met with Doug, the passion for solving this problem, and it was still in healthcare. So it was so high. And then I spoke to some people. They said, if you have to do it, you have to do it now. Your standard job will be like a golden handcuff. You will want to do it. You have to get out of it and make a decision. Talked to a lot of people. And then at one point, we decided, okay, this is the people validated our concept. Before I dived into it, when I will tell people this is what we are trying to do, they actually like the simplicity of the concept. And that made me further believe that, yes, this is the right time. And we started MedCircle.
Yeah, it's scary leaving an industry and a position that works, that you're doing well in, that you're successful in. And there's that comfortability and security that comes along with it. And I think that can be the hardest for aspiring entrepreneurs, to leave that and deciding whether or not it's a good idea to. But I like what you said, that you had your idea validated. And I think that would be a really good starting point for an entrepreneur who's watching or listening and is toying with whether or not they should leave their secure job at the moment. Start testing your idea.
Absolutely.
So how did you test your idea?
It was very anecdotal. It was not a very structured testing. So lots of times what I will do is, even whenever I'm traveling, so I'm on a flight, someone sitting next to me, so I will just start talking to them. And even though I was still full-time practicing, I will tell them that I have a company that does this, even though I did not have a company. We had not started anything. And when they will hear that idea and they will say, oh, this is a great idea, I will use it. Do you have it? I said, no, we have not launched it yet. So I went about doing that. And lots of times, even when my patients were coming to see me, I will ask them, if you had a platform like this, will you use it? And I even one time just drove around from Los Angeles all the way to Phoenix, and I will just stop at coffee shops in the middle of nowhere. And I will talk to people sitting in those coffee shops. What if you had a product like this, will you use it? So that was a great validation personally for me that, yes, one, people understand it. And two, people said, yes, I will use it if I have it.
That's great. How do you know that people weren't just blowing smoke and that they were actually giving you valid feedback?
I think health is a slightly different subject. And when people start talking about it, they actually speak their heart. It is not just because, and if I'm in the middle of a town on a highway with 1,000 people and I stop at a coffee shop and talk to them, again, some things I had to believe in. And it was a spectrum of people that I spoke to. Someone sitting on a flight with me, someone at a coffee shop, my patients. And it was a common concept that people, one, they understood it. That was also important for me. It was not that they're not understanding it. So, and rest, I had to believe in it.
Yeah, and I think that you can tell a lot of times by someone's enthusiasm, how much detailed feedback they're giving you. Yes. It's one thing just to be like, yeah, I'd use it. And yes. another to be like, oh, yeah, I would because of this situation where I could have used it here. And I'm sure the quality of the feedback was very helpful.
Absolutely.
But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how you raised capital and so much more. So sit tight. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
I mean, I don't make money with social media, okay? So what I do is I get attention with social media, and attention precedes ever getting money, you know? The money I don't have today, you have. Somebody else has the money.
Yeah, you always say, who's got my money?
Who's got my money, right? this should be your battle cry. So with social media, I'm not looking to get money from someone. I'm looking to get their attention. Attention precedes the ability to get the money.
Hey, I just heard that people at my friend's company got sextortion emails.
Yeah, it's a popular type of spear phishing attack.
Wow, that sounds serious.
It is. Scammers claim to have a compromising video of the victim and threaten to share it with their contact list unless they pay a ransom.
What if they target someone at our company?
We're secured with Barracuda Sentinel. It uses artificial intelligence to block spear phishing attacks, including sextortion emails.
That's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
A new poll says more Americans approve of President Trump than they do the big media. That's why millions are tuning in to Newsmax TV, America's new conservative channel. On Newsmax TV, see Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Reagan, and more. Bill O'Reilly's No Spin News Show is on Newsmax TV. Get it on DirecTV Channel 349, Xfinity 1115, Dish 216, UVerse 1220, Fios 615, and Spectrum. Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
This is sponsored by Bank of America.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are continuing our conversation with the CEO and co-founder of MedCircle. So capital is one of those topics that every entrepreneur has on their mind. And when I interview entrepreneurs like yourself, they seem to get that capital at different points in their journey. And specifically when you're raising investment money, there's this question of, do we need to have a product or service first, or can we actually pitch our idea without having anything? You were in a unique situation where you came up with your proof of concept but didn't build out the site yet, and you were able to successfully raise money. So can you speak to that?
Everybody raises money at different stages of their life cycle of a company. And I think there are multiple reasons for that. One is who you are. Lots of times, if an engineer starts a company, they, for building the product, they don't need money. They are the capital. So they will put their hours in to build the product. If you come from a background where you are not engineer, you're not a software engineer, especially in technology world, then you need an engineer to build a product for you. You need the team to build a product for you. Either they will come as co-founders or you will need to employ them. Then you need the capital earlier stage. So that's one. The second piece is, who are you connected with? Raising capital at early stage of your company, a lot depends on your network besides what the product is. We were slightly different in a sense that we, because of our co-founder, Mr. Doug Colbeth, he is a successful entrepreneur from his previous companies. So he had the network where we could build a proof of concept, show them the proof of concept, and then not just show them the proof of concept, but show them the vision 3 to 5 years from that. And that was our strategy for raising capital. That's what my advice for everybody who's want to raise capital is. It is not what you have the vision as of today, what you want to do today. You should have a clear vision where it can get in 3 to 5 years. Because
yeah,
that's what the investors are looking for.
That sentiment has been echoed by many of the entrepreneurs that I've interviewed, that ultimately they're investing in your future, where you could go, and
yes,
ultimately the bottom line.
Yes.
But it's not just that. Of course, numbers matter. They're really betting on the founders. Absolutely. And I can absolutely see why you're saying your co-founder was such an asset to pitching to investors.
Absolutely.
And to your point, you needed a programmer. I know that off camera, we chatted a little bit, that you think it's very, very important if you don't have that skill and you're creating a technology company that involves programming, that you have someone full-time on board who's invested and has some skin in the game, correct?
Absolutely.
What have been the biggest changes to being a part of this entrepreneurship world?
Good question. Sometimes I ask them myself. But I think one thing is, as I said, it is there are lots of uncertainties. So you need to balance yourself in those uncertainties. Practicing as a physician, life is very certain. You know exactly what you're doing. You have a steady cash flow. When you come into the entrepreneurial world, you may have a vision, but you go out on the streets, people may not like it. You don't know where what life will bring in a year from now. So you need to realize those uncertainties, filter them out, and then continue the journey. People will ask you, where do you see yourself in a year? Where do you see yourself in 2 years? You tell them that, but you're internally sometimes not confident where you will be. So you just need to balance that vision, the uncertainty, and the challenges all together and pursue your dreams.
Would you say that you're working harder than you ever have before?
It's different.
Describe how it's different.
I think one, say at a personal level, I say, you know, practicing medicine is not the easiest job either. But here, as what we talked earlier, is that you may have a passion, but you need to see what the audience wants. So the challenges that come with it may be something that you'd never expected. You built something, you're so happy about it that everybody's using it. And then if people don't like it, you have to make a change. You have to work with different types of people as a team. That is something different for me. And I think that will happen in the entrepreneurial world, whoever the person is. You have your engineering team, you have your marketing people, you need to work with investors, you have your audience. So it's a very different type of people that you'll be engaging with. Working with everyone is different. That's what I said. It's not harder, it's very different.
Yeah. But with that said, I know that you say in those first few years, you have to really, really work super hard. I don't think any entrepreneur would negate that. But I think sometimes people don't define what working hard looks like. You know, some people's definition of working hard is working long hours. For some people, it's being productive. For some, it's results. So what does working hard look like for you?
For me, working hard is, again, as you said, long hours does not mean working hard. Working hard is one, being productive, and two, always thinking about the product, always thinking about the audience, always thinking about how I can make this bigger, how I can make this successful. And then only the ideas come. So if someone says, I go in, I work from 8 to 4, that's it. I just execute those two things that I've been told and I don't think around it. That sometimes in early stage may not be the right thing. You have to see, okay, I'm doing this. You always have to be just hungry for how can I make it successful? How I can deliver more value to the audience?
Moving your projects forward.
Forward, yes. And it comes with productivity. So long hours does not mean anything. You may spend 20 hours a day and you may be not productive at all. So it is always thinking. You have to be progressive. If something is not working, make a change. You cannot just follow the same path. So that's the combination of that productivity and always thinking about something new. My definition of working hard.
And of course, as a doctor, you value your health a lot and you make it a priority to wake up early and work out every single day. So tell me a little bit about a day in your life.
Yeah, I guess that's a personal habit. What I say is, you know, most of the people don't wake up early. So if you wake up early, you can have 2 to 3 hours for yourself. And once the day starts, you will just get sucked up into multiple different things, your meetings, whatever priorities come. So for me, I start at 5:30, and between 5:30 to 8 is my time. Whether it is I work out, breakfast, or just meditate for some time, but that is my time. There are no meetings scheduled because no one schedules meeting that early. And once you have done that, it is much easier to spend the rest of the day because you will never feel that I'm not devoting time to myself. Lots of times entrepreneurs early stage, they start complaining, you know, I'm working so hard, I have no time for myself. So if you are able to get that hour and a half, an hour for yourself first thing in the morning, you'll be just a happier person that, okay, I take care of myself. I have a life around for me and now I am doing my work.
So how many hours would you say that you work every day, or does it vary?
It varies a lot. It varies a lot. I think whenever something needs to be executed, I don't think so there's any dedicated timeline to it. So
sure. And since you're working, or let me start that over. Since you're getting up so early, what time do you go to bed?
I go to bed like around 11 a.m. 10:30, 11.
Okay, gotcha. Well, thank you so much for sharing a little insight into Absolutely. Your world and your business. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Alex. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
The way the business is now, I don't have to wait on a studio to do a film. The way technology is now, from cameras and things like that, I own those things. I own the company, so I'm able to use the artistic business. So I can make my commercial, I can make my movie, I can make my songs, which is, that's what I've been blessed to do. So it's all the same muscle. And I think this is the greatest time in the world to live, where you can literally grab things, you know, out of the air and take it now to so many different ways to promote it and ways to get it out. So it's an entrepreneur's playground right now.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews, so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Hey. Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. We've got Andre Beringian in the house. He's the CEO of C Digital Labs. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Tell us about your company.
C Digital is an interactive development agency. We also are an innovation lab for some very prominent companies, and we have a startup studio. So primarily, we work with two types of companies. We work with large Fortune 500 companies, and then we work with startups.
Okay, so the enterprise companies and the startups. What's the difference? So when you're working with an enterprise company, what does that process look like versus when you're working with a startup?
Sure. Well, the big difference between those companies is that the enterprise companies have unbelievable amount of resources, but they move really slow. Whereas the startups have the nimbleness and the flexibility, but they have no resources. And so what we do with the large companies, the enterprise companies, is that we act as their innovation lab. And what we do is we get problem statements for them from them. We listen to them and they explain to us what keeps them up at night. And based on those problem statements, we then come up with a strategy and then ultimately ideation on a solution that we should build for them. Generally a software digital solution. And then from there, once we agree that this is how we're going to attack the problems, we then build it. We actually do all the development and we build it. And then the goal for us is to ultimately work with enough of these companies in a particular sector where we can create our own startups that address the problems across the entire sector. So that could be retail, consumer products. Many of those companies all have very similar issues and challenges that face them all. And we try to create startups that address those.
So you're saying that when you get a solution, like a software, for example, that you ultimately use for these big companies, you can also go and use that for the startups?
Correct. Okay. Correct. Or if it's not exactly directly used, we get inspiration from what we do with the big companies to create our startups.
Okay, it gives you ideas for what you can do.
Exactly.
So this seems like a crazy business model that I haven't heard of before. how did you ultimately get into this space? What was something that ultimately led you to this? Was it a job that you hated? Do you have other companies that you were a part of that led to this?
Well, what I still do, and I did before this, is actually run a small venture fund.
Okay.
And what I saw is that we would invest in, or at least review, business plans from a ton of startups. And people were always out to disrupt X, whether it's to disrupt Walmart's business or disrupt some other business. And what we realized is that a lot of times they didn't necessarily have all the knowledge and understanding of what Walmart's business was or that retail business was. And so the inspiration for this, for C Digital Labs business, was instead of guessing at what the problem is and how Walmart or any retailer, for example, could do their business better, why don't I just go ask them? And that's what we do at the labs. We go ask them.
Sounds so simple.
They give us the business they give us their business problems, and then we get a bunch of smart people in a room, figure out the solution.
So you've been doing that for how long? Because it seems like something that you'd have to have quite a long line of history to be able to go to these companies and be like, well, hey, you're gonna pay us to help solve your problem, even though you guys have the billions of dollars. So what ultimately led you to getting the sort of the background and problems, you know, problem solving for big companies?
What we've been doing, this business model that we've been talking about at the labs, we've been doing for about 3 years. But before that, I've been investing for maybe a decade.
Okay.
And so spending enough time around the investing really led us to kind of, you know, go down this path.
Well, take me back to the beginning of your story, because I always love to kind of find out, how did somebody actually end up becoming an entrepreneur? Because there's so many people listening at home that are like, well, I want to be an entrepreneur. Maybe I'm at the job that I hate right now, or maybe I'm just inspired to want to have bigger income and impact and influence in the world. And I think that having my own business that I'm passionate about can allow me to do that.
Sure.
So kind of paint the story for us, like go back to however you want, school or a child, and be like, this is what life was like, and this is what led me to entrepreneurship.
I didn't really know what entrepreneurship was. Yeah. What I knew when
only
I was
recently
younger,
it became trendy.
Exactly. When I knew in the early days is that I liked innovation and I liked doing things that no one else had done. And so that is kind of woven throughout the story. So I'll take you back just a couple chapters here. So undergrad, I was a biochemistry major. I was a biophysics PhD. I was looking at focusing on certain types of research that was applicable to certain types of cancer. So the idea was, how can we make this cancer not happen or make it go away? So I loved doing that, because all that research I did, had no one else had done that before. And it was very cutting edge. I moved from there into business. And my focus was, initially, it was like, okay, I'm a scientist. I want to now learn business. How can I make that transition? Okay. I moved into turnaround consulting, working with distressed companies who had made all sorts of horrible decisions, and using my analytics understanding from research, help those companies figure out what the problem was with their business. Mm. Maybe that something wasn't making them money, a particular line wasn't making money. From there, I ended up being a relatively early member at a company called GoTo. It became Overture. So Overture was a, we pioneered click advertising online. And working with the team there, just one of the most phenomenal teams ever, very innovative, Bill Gross, Idea Labs, just can't say enough about that team. And so in that world, I did some business operations, business development, helped with some of our expansion globally. And once I did that and really got a good flavor for technology startups, started investing. And so then investing led ultimately to C Digital Labs.
That's fantastic. I always love hearing somebody's story and kind of figuring that out. I want to talk about maybe a season of adversity, though, because it's one thing to know someone's story and know how they became successful. It's another, though, to hear about, you know, one of those moments where you went through adversity where you maybe felt like you just wanted to give up. And I think that every entrepreneur either has been or will inevitably hit one of those points. But right now, joining us is the CEO of C Digital Labs. We've got Andre Beringian joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. And I want to know, what was that moment for you, that season of adversity? Could have been in your personal life, could have been in business.
I have had more than one. And the reason I say that is, I know you want one, but I've had more than one.
Give us more than one. That's even better.
And the reason is, I have had to reinvent myself multiple times. And every time that's happened, I went, as I was saying earlier, I was a scientist, then a business guy, but a business guy in the physical world, then moved into the digital world. Yeah. And then I became an investor. And so every time I reinvented myself, it was absolutely difficult. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times for me, I would doubt myself. So it's just not possible. I can't do it. And so nonetheless, stayed with it, stayed laser focused, and was able to overcome my own personal doubts, as well as, you know, others around me, to try to create some level of success.
Well, how do you do that, though? How do you reinvent yourself? Because I think that's one of the biggest things that holds aspiring entrepreneurs back, is reinventing their own identity of, hey, I'm just a person and I've got this job. Right. I'm not a businessman or woman.
Right.
I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not a salesperson or a marketer. Right. How am I going to do this? And so they have to reinvent themselves. And I always tell people, like, you need to start looking at yourself as a boss, as a CEO, as a delegator, as a connector, as a networker, as a speaker, as a leader, as a salesperson, because that's what you have to be, especially when you start your business. You're wearing all the hats. So you've done this many times at a high level. So how do you reinvent yourself? How can you do it fast and easy?
I have been able to find a way to leverage what I know to ultimately learn what I want to learn. And so when I was in science, I knew I wanted to go into business. The only thing I had to offer was I knew how to handle big data. So I was able to move from science into business because I could handle big data and do that analysis. And someone that was helping teach me business. Then from there, I learned some business and I learned some analytics and I was able to take that then to the next level. So the idea always for me is this is a stepping stone for me to get to the next thing. And how can I leverage? So it seems like it's very random, but it's really not, because I'm leveraging something that I learned to get to the next level. Being a go-to and Overture and working with the many startups that we did, whether we acquired them or worked with them, and just being in that startup space was really a great foundation for me ultimately to become an investor, because I saw what it would take to take a company from start to a successful exit. Okay. And then ultimately leverage that to become an investor.
Well, something that you said was that you're really good at, you know, understanding big data, looking at it and being able to essentially analyze it. And here's what you need to do to solve the problem. Right. And I think that at the end of the day, if someone can learn how to look at all of the data in their life, they can start to, as Steve Jobs says, right? You can't connect the dots until you're looking back. That's and right. So if you can kind of share with us, how do you look at the data? How do you look at the things happening in our lives to connect the dots, to help us have the confidence to reinvent ourselves moving forward?
Wow.
It's a tough question.
It is a tough question.
Yeah. Like, when you look at data, what are you looking at? How are you figuring out the problem? How are you creating a solution?
So work-wise, if you look at the companies that we work with, they house and maintain a ton of data. And so the first step is to be able to know what specifically we need to pull out of that. And
that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah,
so when you have all this data, how do you know where to start?
Right. So when we start out with our problem statement, so the problem statement for many companies is it could be more engagement with our customers. It could be when a company gave us a problem statement of more efficiency out of their existing multi-billion dollar operation. And so we start out with a problem statement. And then what we try to do is understand the core basis of the business and figure out which one of those pillars is going to, if we address it, will ultimately move this business forward. And so we start out with that, go in a little deeper, and then start looking at all the data that's associated with that particular pillar. So this particular company that came to us and gave us a problem statement of make us more efficient, by going through our analysis, we actually, and ultimately executing on software, we increased the efficiency of their operations by 50%.
Wow. For a multi-billion dollar company?
About a $40 billion revenue company.
Wow. See, something like that is where I would want to get a little tiny percentage of the increase, right?
I wish I could have done that, but that was impossible. That particular company is a very large retailer and lots of locations around the country. And they came to us and said, we need digital transformation. Yeah. And we were not, at the time, retail experts. We didn't know. Mm. And they were not digital experts. And so we brought our digital minds and told them, this is the data we're looking for. So we need to know what are your customers doing, what's happening at every location, et cetera. Okay. They provided that. And then we did the analysis and the rest
That's
is history.
Phenomenal. Somebody says, I love what I've heard so far in this. And maybe I even want to get a hold of you, learn more about your company. Maybe I know somebody who wants to.
Sure.
Where can they do that?
I'm on all the social media. So LinkedIn, you can email me directly, company directory, call us.
I mean, company website?
Company website, yeah.
What is the company website?
It's cedigital.com, so CIEDIGITAL.com.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, Andre.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, and we connect a community of entrepreneurs. If you'd like to be a part of it, you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
These are a few of the keys you need for success in running a small business, but they are also important attributes no matter what are you doing in your life. I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, adaptability. As you roll out your enterprise, you'll discover that things you expected to work well don't work well at all. You'll stumble into things that you didn't expect to work that will. You'll have to be able to adapt. Number two, persistence. You'll lose big customers, good employees will leave your company, and some may become competitors. To succeed, you'll have to be willing to persist through difficult times. Nothing can take the place of persistence, and you can't succeed without it. Number three, work ethic. Running a small business is difficult. Your days will be much longer than 8 hours. If your week starts on Monday, you'll pass 40 hours on Thursday. But you won't slow down. Success as an entrepreneur requires hard, hard work. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Mother's Day is next Sunday, and Pro Flowers is offering an amazing special. One dozen assorted roses for mom for $19.99. And as a special bonus, double the roses and get a premium vase for just $9.99 more. Go to proflowers.com, click on the blue microphone, and enter the secret code 1717. With fresh flowers, express delivery, and unique vases and accessories that mom will love, Pro Flowers has everything you need to get your Mother's Day shopping done for all the moms you know. Order now from Pro Flowers to get amazing savings. Just pick a delivery date and its freshness is guaranteed or your money back. One dozen assorted roses sent fresh from the farms and guaranteed to stay fresh and beautiful for at least 7 days, starting at $19.99. Or double the roses and get a premium vase for just $9.99 more. Order now because Mother's Day is next Sunday. The only way to get this amazing deal is to go to proflowers.com, click on the microphone in the upper right corner, and enter the secret code 1717. That's proflowers.com, secret code 1717. Mother's Day is next Sunday, and Pro Flowers is offering an amazing special. One dozen assorted roses for mom for $19.99. And as a special bonus, double the roses and get a premium vase for just $9.99 more. Go to proflowers.com, click on the blue microphone, and enter the secret code 5959. With fresh flowers, express delivery, and unique vases and accessories that mom will love, Pro Flowers has everything you need to get your Mother's Day shopping done for all the moms you know. Order now from Pro Flowers to get amazing savings. Just pick a delivery date and its freshness is guaranteed or your money back. One dozen assorted roses sent fresh from the farms and guaranteed to stay fresh and beautiful for at least 7 days, starting at $19.99. Or double the roses and get a premium vase for just $9.99 more. Order now because Mother's Day is next Sunday. The only way to get this amazing deal is to go to proflowers.com, click on the microphone in the upper right corner, and enter the secret code 5959. That's proflowers.com, secret code 595.
What are the legal do's and don'ts when starting a business? I'm Alex Worley, and here to help us answer that question, Len Gray. He's the founding attorney at Gray Legal. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And you learned a lot of these do's and don'ts through experience the hard way. So tell me your story first.
Yeah, I probably learned most of the don'ts that way.
Okay.
So I was attorney at a large law firm in New York, did that for several years, was pretty stir crazy. You'll find that those large firms are not the best for the entrepreneurial type. And then I left to, at the time, actually start a beer brewery in my hometown of Memphis.
Cool.
Yeah, it was the thing I should have done and didn't do. All my friends are still mad at me about it. But after going from there through a couple of other startups, I ultimately started a SaaS platform with a good friend in the legal recruiting space. And we did that for about 5 years. And along the way, did just about everything wrong that you could.
Okay, so let's go through some of them. What were the things that you did wrong?
Well, the biggest thing we did wrong, to put it simply, is we spent way too much money on all the wrong things.
Like what?
The two biggest ones were legal and software development. Well, I should start off by saying he was a lawyer, or he is a lawyer too. And the last thing you want are two lawyers negotiating their own partnership agreement against one another. And so we ended up with this 50-page monstrosity of a partnership agreement that we brought in two other law firms to help us draft.
Wow.
It was pretty ridiculous.
And you were lawyers.
Yeah, it's true. You know, you get into the weeds and you know, frankly, I see it all the time now. It's one of the hardest parts of starting a business when you're doing it with somebody else is the, how do you value a speculative business piece of it, right? I mean, in your mind, when you start a startup, you're going to become Mark Zuckerberg, right? I mean, that's why you do it. It can be a very thankless job. It's certainly in the beginning, you're not going to make any money doing it. And so you do it with the idea that at some point down the road, you're going to have all the money in the world. And how do you split up a business, which on day one is worth absolutely zero and really probably has more debts than assets, you know? And then how do you get yourself in a good position for down the road?
And it's obviously a fine balance because on one hand, you need that legal protection. But on the other hand, like you said, you can go too far like you did and spend too much. So where's the balance?
That's a wonderful question. I think unfortunately there's not an easy answer. And I think that it probably, it's very kind of facts and circumstances dependent. There are sites out there, obviously like LegalZoom, and there's a site Clerky that can be really great for the right set of founders. Founders who are sophisticated, if they've done it before, if they understand kind of what they're doing on their own, then you can get a really wonderful product from those sites. I would never say anything bad about any of them. But then there's others who are just starting off that need probably a bit of guidance to make sure that they're adequately protecting themselves, but also to stop them before they go too far and end up with the 50-page partnership agreement that covers things that will never in a million years become an issue.
Is that how you knew you went too far? Is that you started to get way too hypothetical down the road?
No, that's not when we learned. When I learned that we went way too far was we took an investment on probably a year after we finished that agreement and ripped it up and threw it away, never to be seen again. And so all that work we spent, all that time we spent, all the money we spent never mattered. And that was money that could have been spent on marketing, on building a better product, on selling the product, on hiring people. But instead, we had a giant piece of paper that wasn't even worth what it was printed on.
Oh, wow. And the next don't is to not kill your business before it starts, which sounds amazing, but what does it mean?
No, that's exactly right. It relates to what we were just talking about with that partnership agreement. You know, my partner in that startup was one of my very good friends. And by the end of the negotiation, we were about to murder one another. And you see this all the time, that people really, they lose perspective on what it is that they're trying to do. And they start to quibble over things that, again, just don't really matter in the long term. And you're never going to become Mark Zuckerberg if you can't get yourself off the ground.
Okay, so what's the big major do that we need to keep in mind?
The big major do, I think it relates to the two don'ts that we've talked about. It really is make sure that you're protected adequately. Take the time to get your foundation solid. If you're going to be a venture-backed startup or if you want to be a venture-backed startup, doing the right things from a formation perspective so that when an investor comes in and does diligence, they know that you know what you're doing, or at least you can fake it pretty well. And then beyond that, it's managing your spend and being really smart and not trying to over-lawyer something. And one of the things we see all the time, my brethren in the legal community, they can, oftentimes when a client comes asking what they should, or rather telling the attorney what they want, they'll just nod their head and keep, turning the crank on the billable hour. So it's being vigilant and making sure that you're not getting talked into more than what you need. And again, it's a fine balance, but you can get there and you can get, you can find good pricing now and you can get, yourself, as I said, have a great foundation, but not have it over-lawyered so that you're tearing up your partnership agreement after 12 months and never referring to it again.
Great advice. Thank you so much to my guest, Len Gray, founding attorney at Gray Legal. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and every successful business thought leader or high-level achiever at some point in their life or career has had a mentor, has had a coach or an advisor. And joining us right now is Noah Kerr. He's the president and founder of Oscar Mike. My question for you is, how have mentors impacted you on your journey so far as an entrepreneur?
For the last 15 years or so, or 13 years since the day I was injured, I live in a world of inspiration because I'm surrounded by the most inspiring people in the world. And some of them have become mentors to me. I remember when I was first hurt and I was in the hospital, a guy came in my room. He had been hurt about 2 years prior to me, and he was volunteering for the organization that was helping me out a lot in the hospital. They're called the Paralyzed Veterans of America. And this guy, Sherman Gillums, was a volunteer there. Watching him, while he was helping me in the hospital and teaching me all the little tricks of the trade, I mean, as a quadriplegic, your hands don't work, 90% of your body doesn't work. So you have to learn how to eat, how to get dressed, how to do all of these things, get in a car, And so he taught me all of those things. But also while he was teaching me those things, I watched him get involved in school. I watched him go back to college. I watched how he was living on his own and then how he got employed by the Paralyzed Veterans of America because he had been helping out there so much. And today he's the executive director. He had moved all the way from the bottom as a volunteer to the top of the organization. And you know, when you get to watch people like that and have them as your mentor, you know, it's hard to not follow in their footsteps and just want to do great things for people.